the National Archives podcast series, UK Archives Discovery Forum 2013, Keynote Talk, presented by James Davis.
I'm James Davis from the Google Cultural Institute. I lead up our content team, so I work with our partners around the world on finding ways to showcase their archive material. We work with art museums, with historical archives, with institutions, private collections, all kinds of cultural organisations who have a wealth of cultural assets and metadata and would benefit from a kind of single global platform which we offer. So I work with those partners. I used to be one myself. I used to work at Tate, and I'll say a little bit more about that during the presentation. I kind of want to frame today's presentation around a question that is dear to me and I hope prove dear to you, and I hope that we can help to try and answer it today. It's about how do we assert the value found in our archives to those who don't see it? How do we assert that value to those who are disinterested in it, to those who disagree with it? How do we assert the value found in our archives to those who are looking at a spreadsheet and looking at a cell related to budgets for archives, and they're halving numbers, and they're chopping off digits, and they're overwriting healthy figures with zeros? How do we assert this value of our archives to all of those people? Now, I don't claim to have the answer to this, but I do have a suggestion. And if you'll allow me a conceit for a moment, it's because I work for a kind of archive company. So we don't collect archives. We don't really digitize them. We don't operate a building that you can visit. We don't research these archives. We don't catalog them, per se, or conserve them physically, or study them in any particular way. Instead, we do a couple of things. The first thing we do at this archive company, Google, is very general, and you're very familiar with it. As Oliver kind of framed at the beginning, what we do is we provide a way to find things from the world's largest archive of information. This is how the company began around 15 years ago. To answer what at the time was a kind of fascinating and unsolved academic problem, how to determine which piece of this enormous archive, which web page was most relevant to your needs. That research led to the PageRank algorithm and the Google search tool that we all know today. It works very well, and it makes this preposterously sized archive beneath it a little bit more manageable. Now, since then, we've been working deeper into our stated mission, which is to organize the world's information and make it universally accessible. I hope this mission is sympathetic to that of the archivist, albeit a rather aspirational one. Now, as Google grew in size, and it diversified in scope, and through this process, we began to encourage its employees to follow paths that they were passionate about. You may know that we have this idea of a 20% time, where you can spend that much of your time during the week working on something that you are particularly interested in, and then you convince your manager that this is worthwhile, or your manager says, you know what, that's not going anywhere. So if you get about a dozen people in a room, which we have plenty more of in here today, you find at least one of them is interested in art. Now, some people at Google were really passionate about the world of art and museums, so they devoted their 20% time to explore ways in which new technologies could be applied to this particular sector. So what came out of it was a combination of our Street View technology, of gigapixel, very high resolution photography, and some cutting-edge interface design to provide what we think is kind of a compelling and very visually rich experience, which is the Google Art Project. This is where I personally came in, because I was at Tate and I was the partner working with Google on that project. Now, I kind of, at the time, from the outside, I really admired Google's willingness to listen and to adapt its plans according to the needs of the sector. This was kind of new and refreshing to me. I didn't expect it to necessarily be like that. And so it was with great sadness that I ended up leaving Tate, and great happiness that I ended up joining this particular company. Now, other passion-led projects were going on at the same time. We took Street View to some of the world's great landmarks and monuments for the World Wonders Project. That was in collaboration with UNESCO. We showcase the Dead Sea Scrolls in incredible detail, and we work with the Jewish Historical Archive, Yad Vashem, to help bring their content online using some really innovative tagging mechanisms of their decades of historical metadata. We also work with the Nelson Mandela Foundation to highlight some stories from their incredibly rich and historically important archives. Now, this brings me to the second archive-related thing that we do at Google today, and that is that core activity of the Google Cultural Institute. Because we saw that all of these art and culture and archive-related projects, they needed a home, they needed a proper team, a proper budget. And so we formed the Cultural Institute in Paris in 2011, and the stated aim is to preserve and to promote the world's culture online. And the next step is, of course, to work with some of the world's greatest sources of cultural data, which is, of course, archives and those in the room who represent them. And we wanted to find a way to scale the experience of working across large and small organizations with varying kinds of archives, and we settled upon this core experience of an online exhibit. So what we've been looking at here is this has been cycling through different exhibits related to Mandela. You can see we take a horizontal left-to-right approach. It takes archive material, combines it with text put together by the curator or expert from the archive to showcase what's actually going on and to tell a kind of story. This is a letter written by Mandela to his two daughters. Mandela's in prison at the time, and Winnie Mandela has just been imprisoned as well, and is writing an extremely heartfelt, heartbreaking letter to his daughters, telling them that both their parents are gone, and giving them the kind of harsh reality of the life that they're about to face. This is particularly touching for me, as a father of two daughters myself, but I found myself really moved by this idea that you would tell your children that both their parents were gone and that they had to find a way to cope with that. So you can see here the principle in these online exhibits is that a small selection of material is gathered and contextualized and formed into a digestible narrative. And that takes you, the visitor, into a topic and into some archive assets and then into the archive itself. We felt that using this quite accessible entry point of the online exhibit, we could achieve several quite interesting things in this arena. Firstly is simply the platform itself. It's powerful, it's flexible, and we feel that archives can use it to showcase their material. Google covers the hosting and other costs like that, and we ensure that the platform uses the best of our new technologies and leverages the best of our wide audiences. Now, secondly, by collaborating with multiple archive sources on one platform, we can begin to see that, and there are enormous practical advantages when you have multiple archives in one particular place. So a gap in one archive is filled by another. Counterpoints and multiple perspectives come naturally. Smaller archives benefit from a larger home, and larger archives benefit from a new proximity to their peers and the development of a community of archives with a shared goal. A national stage becomes a global stage, and the public have a single starting point that requires very little initial research on their part. Now, thirdly, we felt that the online exhibit format could be compelling in its own right. Now, we can explore narratives where we may not have explored an archive itself, and we can be exposed to assets that were previously hidden. We can be taken on a journey by curators and experts who previously may have only had a small specialist audience, but whose work we know is of far greater value and can be appreciated by a far greater audience. So this exhibit here, this is about the Romanian Revolution. It's from the archive of the National Television Channel in Romania. I have all kinds of cultural interests, but I confess that in a million years I never would have sought out the National Television Station of Romania as an archive that I wanted to dive into. However, by gathering together their exhibits in this way, using their own curators and experts, what we have here is TV footage from when dissidents in the capital stormed the TV station and announced a revolution live on TV obviously completely unprecedented, an amazing event in 20th century history, and to be able to witness this again, and to be able to have it contextualized by those who were there and those who've done decades of research on it, suddenly the National Archives of the Romanian TV station are now of great interest to me, and I want to find out much more. So it's in this kind of third area about online exhibits that I think we can begin to address the initial question: how do we assert the value found in our archives to those who don't see it? Now, this question comes about because, unlike some other cultural areas, archives don't always speak for themselves. As we know, in the public's eye, the mental associations of what an archive is or what an archive does are not always accurate. And theoretically, archives always grow in size, they never shrink. The practical problem of quantity versus accessibility only becomes worse over time. IBM recently claimed that 90% of the world's data was created in the last 2 years. Now, lots of this data ends up on paper. Lots of it is lost or deleted. Lots more of it is still to come. And to avoid this kind of far-reaching but plausible notion that archives transmogrify into albatrosses, we clearly need to assert the value found in those archives as best we can right now. But who are we going to assert it to exactly? Who are the audience for archives? Is it just researchers, statisticians, academics, historians, students? Is it genealogists, marketers, politicians, activists, other archivists? Is it curators or teachers or librarians or storytellers or dramatists? Or is it account managers or administrators and surveyors and economists and video editors and furniture designers, insurance underwriters, programmers and prison officers, production assistants, waste officers and youth workers? In short, is the audience just people? For archives surely are really about people. Archives represent people. They are about lives and deaths. They are about triumphs and tragedies, about comings and goings, about fashions and functions and frictions and factions. Archives tell us everything we could hope for about the mistakes we've made and how to avoid them, and about the glories of the past and how they may be repeated. Archives tell us exactly how dull or exciting it was 100 years ago, or 50, or 1, or even yesterday, and therefore how dull or exciting things might be tomorrow. Now, I think we know this in the room. We know the value. At the Cultural Institute, we're dedicated to asserting the value of those archives, and one way we do that is through telling stories from them. But not everyone knows or understands this value. I hope that you all agree that we must continue to explore ways to assert the value of archives in order to protect them. Thank you for your time.
This talk was recorded on 7th of March 2013 at the National Archives, Kew. This podcast is copyright to the National Archives. All rights reserved.